Hello everyone, welcome to episode 145 of the podcast. Thank you so much for being here and thanks for your comments and feedback on last week's episode, which was about growing an art business. Because we had so many questions coming through and comments, we thought that this week we would do a Q&A. And to make it semi-official, I went over to my Instagram and shared an Instagram story where you can submit a question. And we had a whole lot of questions come through. Some of them are business related, some are art related, and some are more personal. So there's a really good mix of things that we are going to chat about today. So let's get into the questions from this week. And the first one is, how much time do each of you spend in the away studio versus the home studio each week?
Well, I spend more time in there than you do.
Yeah, I'm a homebody and I do have my little home studio upstairs. And it varies a lot depending on the type of work that I'm doing. If I'm doing more sketchbook work and more smaller paintings and even computer work, I'll tend to stay home because I like to be able to have a cup of tea. Not that we can't have tea at the studio, but I like to be able to go into the garden and break up my day in that way.
That's because you're very focused. Like when you have work to do, you can get your work done. I'm very easily distracted. And when I say distracted, I mean the couch distracts me. The dog distracts me. But I also like the idea, like this, I see it like an imaginary switch in my head. And when I get in my car and I drive to the studio, I'm now going to work. And I really like that idea. I like the idea of going to work.
Yeah, I'm in a constant state of confusion around that because I head to the studio and sometimes when I'm there, the away studio, I feel really productive and I get that feeling of separation between home and the art life. And I'm like, yep, this is the way to go. And then another week I'll be working at home and I'll be, oh no, this is it. I'm sitting out on the deck and having a little break and watching the birds in the trees. And then I go back in, I do a bit of art. I really enjoy being at home. So I haven't found a rhythm with it, but I've come to terms with that there will be different times of the year when I'll be in the other studio and times when I'll be at home. I'm gearing up at the moment to be home a little bit more because we're heading into school holidays. So I've been setting up my home studio to do more sketchbook work and smaller things. Just in the last few weeks, because I've been painting on bigger substrates, I've been in the other studio working on acrylic paintings on wooden panels. So it depends what I'm working on. The other side of it is I'm still trying to set up both spaces so that I have enough supplies in each one. So I've been spending this week while the Black Friday sales and things were on, stocking up on art supplies so that I don't keep carting supplies from one place to the other.
I'm quite sure if I dig through all our podcasts, I could find 20 podcasts where you speak about, I want supplies in both places, so I'm not carrying stuff around.
Well, I've been really stingy about buying art supplies. I don't know why I've been onto this idea of use what you have, you know, don't buy new stuff, to the point where it's actually been to my detriment. And I had a little bit of a wake-up call recently where I went, this is your business and your life, invest in it. Like get yourself some more supplies so that you have what you need and you can make more art. So there really is that point where you need to realize that your creativity is an investment. So as far as like how much time do we spend in the is there a number? Is there a split? I don't know if we can say.
Yeah, I'd say you're 80-20 home to work and I would be, let's say 80-20 work to home.
Yeah, the other way around.
Yeah.
So yeah, the offsite studio is more Richie's domain and the home studio is more mine.
Yeah.
So the next question is, what's a good way to ease into teaching or to figure out if it's even for me? Well, I would say using Instagram or Facebook, social media platforms to test the waters first and start with sharing posts where you provide a little bit more instruction. You might share what supplies you're using or talk a bit about the process. You can then move from sharing, say, a photograph to a short little video, time lapses, start to see how you feel about sharing your process. Because for some artists, sharing the process of how they make their art is a very vulnerable and scary thing. And it has business ramifications, because when you start teaching, they start being inspired by you. So you're going to start seeing art that looks like yours out on the interwebs. So there's a whole lot of things you need to test out to see how you feel about it. And I would start with that, and you might progress to doing a live if you are that way inclined. I'm super scaredy cat when it comes to lives, but that's one way you could do it. Pop the camera on and do a little tutorial and see how that feels. A free class is a great way to go, because when you do something free, you don't have to be so worried about how it's put together and the production and the lighting and all that sort of stuff. You can just see how it feels, see how people are reacting to it, and build from there. Yeah, mixing paint colors. I really like the idea of doing like a weekly tips post on social media as a way to test the waters. Something really simple. And you'll be amazed at how something like that can grow legs and develop. And one of the best ways to go into teaching is when you start getting a lot of people coming to you and saying, do you have an online course? And then you know you have a little warm audience waiting for you. So that's what I would do. The next one is, please share any reference of a business coach who has helped you. I can certainly do that. My business coach is called Laurie Jacobson. Yeah, she's done wonders for our art business and really helped me on a personal level as well. I'll leave her website. You can go and check her out. She does design and website stuff as well as business mentoring.
She is the best.
Yes, we love Laurie.
Yes, we do.
And I have...
Hi, Laurie.
I have regular monthly catch-ups with Laurie where I chat about what I'm working on. And at the moment, what I'm really getting from that is having an accountability partner. That's what I need. Someone who I say, okay, this month I'm going to do this, and we set some goals, and then we revisit it a month down the track and see if I actually did it. And I find just by communicating with somebody what I'm doing, and you could do this with a friend, you know, it doesn't have to be a formal coaching relationship, but having someone that you share your goals with and then catch up with is very powerful.
Yeah, and having someone to say, that's a really bad idea, it's very important too.
Yeah, it's wonderful if you can find someone who is very honest and willing to, you know, share information and give you practical stuff. That's what I really craved from a business coach, is someone that could give me some practical strategies and ideas. And Laurie certainly delivered on that and helped us to make our business more robust and sustainable. And in last week's episode, we talked about being more in a sustain, maintain mode. And we wouldn't have been able to do that without Laurie's help in smoothing out our income and using things like sales and all that sort of stuff to do that. Right, next one. Do you still do Facebook ads via Ads Manager since the new privacy stuff started, and is it worth it? So this is an interesting one, because it's something that I have been wondering myself and testing out. There have been some big changes where people can elect whether or not they are targeted to with marketing on, you know, Facebook, Instagram, and all that sort of stuff. That's huge, because if people are turning that off, that means that they're not getting ads from people that they engage with and things like that. For me, I tested it out, and I had a reasonably good Facebook ad campaign with our last online course. So I was like, oh, okay, it seems to still be working. I would say it's not working quite as well as it was a couple of years ago, as far as the return on investment, but still worthwhile. But then I ran ads for the most recent Black Friday sale, and they really struggled. So I'm not sure why that is, and whether or not there was just a lot of competition out there. So it's still working, but not quite as well.
So the end of the question was, is it still worth it? So the answer to that is yes, definitely. Yeah,
yes, it is still worth running Facebook ads. With the Facebook ads that I run, I do tend to do quite targeted ads. So I am advertising to a fairly warm audience, and I use my email list, my Instagram followers and things like that to do that. Some of those audiences are limited now by people turning off the option. So I have started to open up to just general interest audiences on Facebook advertising, which is a bit more hit and miss. So people that have shown through their activity that they're interested in mixed media art or sketchbooks or painting. So I'm working my way through the process, but I haven't given up on Facebook ads. They are still a really valuable way of maintaining exposure, especially if you're not as active on Instagram in your own daily posting, which I haven't been. It's a good way to get the word out if you are, you know, offering a new product or something like that. How do you maintain motivation in tough times? What do I do when I feel a bit of a slump? Because I do go through periods where I feel unmotivated.
What normally happens for me is like you won't be painting for a bit, you know, or you'll be doing some part of the business that doesn't involve filming or content creation. And then I'll go maybe a couple of weeks, maybe even a month, and then I'll crack up. I'll say, I have nothing to do. I'm getting a job. And you're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get a job driving a truck or something. And you're like, what do you mean? And I haven't done any work. And you're like, okay, all right then, let's rejig something and then we'll jump into a creative patch. Maintaining motivation for me tends to be cracking up every now and then.
Yeah, Richie has a meltdown and then I respond to that meltdown.
Yes.
It's generally what happens. Sometimes I need a change of scene as well. Just recently I have spent some time reorganizing, going through all of my drawers, getting rid of stuff, like throwing out. So a good old declutter can help me when I'm feeling fuzzy and not motivated. So instead of focusing on making art, I finally did my mood board. Yeah, so this happened actually recently. I went upstairs. My studio at home was looking a little bit depleted and sad because I'd shifted everything down to the other studio. What I did was I tidied it up. I got rid of a whole lot of scrappy bits of art and swatches and things I didn't need anymore. I redid the mood board. I looked at what supplies I needed to order. I did a proper stock take. Like I got out all my paints, made sure I had key colours. And I got really swept up in this whole process. I had music on. I was loving it, totally loving it.
And what did I do about 4 days before that? Had a meltdown.
Yes, so you had a meltdown. I realised I needed to get back into making art and refocus on the creative side of the business. I went into the studio and it wasn't very inspiring. It looked a bit sad. And I got my space ready to create. So that's what tends to happen with us. Next question. Hardest part of your journey so far?
I find that almost impossible to answer because I'm loving it. Like even the hard parts don't seem hard. Does that make sense? And yeah. I know it sounds a bit like a cop-out. The answer would be the downtime for me, the not creating.
Yeah, and for me it would be when I feel like I can't stop. So it's almost the opposite. The continuity, that feeling of there's never a finish line, like there's always something to do. That's the hardest part. And that would have been the most extreme in the middle phase of our business when we were trying to get as many classes out as we could and get enough income coming in. So a few years ago now, I would say, was the hardest part. So there was the early stage, which was really exciting and everything was new. And then there was this sort of middle stage where I wasn't yet sure if it was going to work and there wasn't that security of income coming in and I felt like I couldn't stop. And that would have been the hardest stage. And also the children were younger. This stage right now is a lot easier. So if you have young children at the moment, I really feel for you because there's so many competing needs, and I would often be trying to get something done, like finish posting something or working on a painting, but then you've got kids that need stuff, and it's different now. Our kids are very self-sufficient.
And it's funny, just listening to you talk, like you're saying that middle bit, that was hard because there was no end. And I was in my element in that time. I was loving it. Like we'd film stuff and you'd say, no, I'm not releasing that. And I'd be like, yeah, okay. I wouldn't push back. On to the next one. Like filming, editing. And then you're like, oh no. Like I was renting halls, getting equipment. Like I was so in my groove.
Yeah. I think for me though, there's such a lot of work. Like it's not just making the art, coming up with a class, but it's also continuing to engage with a community, learning about sales and marketing, building a website, creating opt-ins for people on the website. So you build your, like, I just felt like I was doing so much all at once.
Yeah.
And holding so many balls that it was very tiring.
You're in a phase now where you're really happy and content with your art. And I'm like, no, I need...
You need more work. Yeah, that's what you need.
You know?
Yeah, I have become much more comfortable with not holding all the balls in the air, whereas at that stage I really felt like I needed to always be doing everything. And now I am happy and content to just take a couple of weeks off from something. But I've usually got something else going on as well, whereas I think for you, when we take a few weeks off from creating content – you don't have as many other things to fill that hole with. It's also just a different difference in personality. And, you know, I enjoy taking more breaks than you do.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, outside of the business and outside of the family, like, I have projects that I do where I travel for, and COVID coming in and that all got shut down. It's just like, if I'm not creating with you because of COVID or whatever, I'm literally not doing anything.
Yeah. Yes. COVID has had a big impact for you as well around that kind of thing. Right. Sorry. I lost my train of thought. I was listening, Richie.
See, you're asking me what the hardest part of my journey is when I open up and Laura doesn't even listen.
I was only half listening to that response.
Were you saying something? I was opening up.
Okay. What does success mean to you, and what do you consider a good life?
Now you see, there's the double-edged sword. A successful and good life for me is being at home, taking the kids to school, being around to make the lunches, being more present as a father and a husband. But then when I'm given all the time in the world to be that person, I need work. I want more. I want to be creating. What success to me can also be a detriment to me. I need a very good balance between being able to be stay at home, get the kids to school, be present, but I also want to be able to do 23 hours a day, photography, filmmaking, editing. Like there's that part of me as well. So if I'm only doing filmmaking, content creation, editing, in the studio away from home, I get very, very, very unhappy. And if I'm only at home doing the other stuff, like being present, being a dad, being a husband, I can also get quite unhappy.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a crazy thing to say, especially to like an audience. You know, like here I am in our dream home with a beautiful wife and gorgeous kids and the cat and the dog. And all the time in the world to go to the gym and go to the physio and make the lunches and take Asher to school. Like beautiful, like it's a dream life. But I need something more. Like I need to be creating. And if I'm not creating, I can get unhappy.
I mean, I don't think that sounds crazy at all. It makes perfect sense to me. Like we all need creative purpose. And when I think about what success means to me, it comes back to an episode that we did, I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, and the title of the episode was Living a Well-Rounded Creative Life. And that phrase has stuck with me. And it is about balance. And balance is something that's always shifting. But it's about constantly assessing and adjusting your creative life to suit where you are at that time and getting better at that process of moving and changing and recognizing when, okay, we need to shift back into a more creative phase of work. Or on the other side of it, recognizing when you're feeling tired and the beginning of burnout and you need to take better care of yourself. So for me, success is about having balance. It's not perfect, but it is about being able to change and shift as needed in order to feel good. And I also think another side of it is not panicking or freaking out when it does get out of whack, because it's inevitable. So being able to bring some kind of calmness to the situation and say, hey, you know what? I'm feeling exhausted. People get exhausted. It happens. What am I going to do about it? Let's have a scheduled 7-day switch off. And then the flip side of that, which has just happened recently, you know, we're getting a little complacent. We're not feeling so motivated. Let's sit down and have a planning session and come up with something exciting to make next year.
Which so we did.
We did, yeah.
And we're all happy again.
Yeah, so it is about living a well-rounded creative life where you have that ebb and flow of creativity and also making time to look after yourself. This year for me, what has been so successful about the year is that I've been able to keep running the art business, but I've also been able to look after myself and start doing exercise, looking after my health, getting things sorted out and seen to that I'd been putting off for years, doing yoga, learning how to relax, those sorts of things. So for me, it's about having both. It's about having the art and the art business, but also having a really good quality of life as well. Okay, so the next question is, do you have a local group of creatives that you get together with, thoughts on that for support? Well, I don't at the moment. I used to, and it was a big part of the early stage of my art journey. And it's something that I miss, that I, you know, haven't had for quite a long time, just catching up with fellow artists and people in the local area. While I'm not doing it at the moment, it is definitely something that I would recommend. Yeah, go for it. See, you know, put something out on your Instagram, Facebook, chat to local art communities, see what happens, go to a class. It's amazing what can spring from that.
Yeah, I'm not part of a photography club, but I do hang out with other photographers. You know, so we might go and shoot, and it's always crazy creative stuff that's not work related. So we'll do some light painting or wire wall, or we'll come to the studio and we'll play around with some lights or whatever. But yeah, it's really good for doing stuff you wouldn't normally do.
Yeah, so we're all for it.
Yeah, 100%,
all for it.
Yes.
So the next one is there's an example first. So this is a caption, I'm not a writer, and then in brackets, that's why I paint. And then the question is it really necessary to have snappy lines on your post? So I think this is about copywriting and coming up with captions and you know, maybe even things that are a little bit clickbaity.
Oh,
you know, clickbait. Like, is it necessary to kind of add the drama, you know, like send out an email and say, you know,
I did this to my painting and I destroyed it.
Yeah, like really like dramatic yeah. headlines yeah. or, you know, this is the worst thing that ever happened to me or, you know, I'm giving up.
Yes.
You know, there's that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't feel it's necessary because it's not something that I've ever gone down that road. Does it work? Yeah, it'll get people to open your email. So if you're looking at open rates on an email or maybe – in, you know, the number of people that perhaps click on your post, it might get attention.
You have to remember, you must start out and be your most authentic self. Now, if you go to parties and you hang out with your friends and you're known for being snappy, witty, dropping one-liners, then absolutely, if you feel like your thumbnail brings out a snappy one-liner, well, do that because that's who you are. But if you're reserved and conservative and you're not into that kind of stuff, don't start being something you're not. Just be you.
Yeah, I think that's the best possible way you could answer that, because that's certainly how I feel. I try and keep my captions and my headings very close to the way that I would talk normally. And rather than trying to go with something that's going to get attention but doesn't feel right. And as I say, you might get people to open the email, but will they get a good feeling from it? Will they stick around? Will it encourage them to take one of your classes or buy your art print? I'm not sure. So, you need to think about that from your own personal perspective. Okay, the next one, who inspires you the most on a personal level for self-development? I found this question really hard.
Oh, did you read this already?
Yeah, well, I was looking at the print-off because we've printed off the question.
Because that's the first time I've seen that. I'm trying to think.
I'm not sure. I'm constantly being inspired by different things that I read or see, but I don't have like one person or something that I come back to.
Bo Miles inspires me. Like, I can't believe it. Like, he really, for someone I've never met, I've read his book, I watch his YouTube, like I'm subscribed to his YouTube, and I'm invested in him. Do you ever look at somebody and say, I want some of that? And when I was a kid growing up, it was always action heroes. It was always like Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone, and it was always these larger-than-life characters. And I watch Asher looking at Marvel, Spider-Man and Captain America and all of these superheroes. And I remember being his age and wanting to be them. And then I go out into the big bad world and I go on my journey and I try to be these supermen, macho, masculine, provider. And then I see a guy like Bo Miles and he's soft and beautiful and creative and pleasant and well-spoken. And I'm like, yeah, I wasted my life trying to be something I didn't even want to be. It wasn't in me to be a macho tough guy, but I tried so hard to be one, And then I watch someone like Bo Miles and I found him on YouTube of all places. And he lives here in Australia and he's 6 foot something with red hair and freckles. And there's nothing extraordinary about him, yet he's the most attractive man I think I've ever been introduced to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So he really, really inspires me.
I love him too. He definitely gives off some...
Will you put a link?
Yeah, I will. Yeah, but he gives off a very calming, grounded energy that I love.
And it's funny, when I watch his YouTube, I used to say to myself, he'd make a great soldier. Like there's no giving him. And in his book, he talks about how when he came to this crossroads in his life, he was almost going to choose the life of soldiering, but he didn't. He chose the path he chose, thankfully.
Okay, well, I don't have someone to share, but I'll think about that.
Yeah, and if it agree comes with to me with Bo.
I'll agree with you with Bo because we both enjoy watching his little films on YouTube. So the next one is, what did you think when you found the koala in your yard? So magical. So for anyone who doesn't know, I shared a little Instagram story of a koala that we had in our backyard. And he was down low on the ground, which is rare for koalas. Not, it does happen, but usually they're up very high in the trees behind our property. And we do see them quite a bit. So for us, seeing a koala isn't like super rare, but it's been a very long time since I've seen one up that close. I think I would have been about 7 or 8 years old. So, it was exciting and it was certainly very exciting for our children because they haven't seen one like that in their own backyard, just happily sitting in the tree. So it was a very special experience. So he wasn't around for very long. He just came into the yard, said hello, very relaxed, was in the tree really low, just a meter or so off the ground, and then he crawled under the fence and went back to the big gum trees. Yeah. He was actually, I think, up in the tree in our neighbor's yard, and we had gone over there for a Christmas party. And I think he might have come into our yard because we were all being too
loud
and noisy in their yard.
It's funny, just talking about that party that we had, I was talking to one of our neighbors who's been living here for 20 years. He goes, oh, do you make much use of the park? I said, yeah, walking. I try to walk in it every day. And I said, can I make a confession? He goes, yeah. I said, every time I see a kangaroo, and I see them every day, I can't stop myself from going, oh, it's a kangaroo. And he says, Richie, I've been here 20 years. And every time I see a kangaroo, I go, oh, it's a kangaroo. It's just, yeah. So seeing that koala, like, that will never, ever get old.
Yeah, we get very excited about the wildlife around where we live. And we certainly make the most of it. You and I go walking in the national park nearly every day. And I saw a couple of emus the other day.
Oh, so jealous.
And it was, yeah, it was exciting. And, you know, when we see kangaroos on our driveway, it's the best.
It's so good.
Yeah, so we love it. What are your favorite things in this season of life? Well, I love this season of life. I feel very, very happy in the current time that I'm in. And I think part of that is growing up, getting a little bit more confident and comfortable in my skin, having a little bit more time for self-care now that the children are older is huge for me. Being able to spend time doing things like reading books and yoga classes and, yeah, it's there's something really lovely about this phase. What are my favorite things in it? Having more time, just having time to do the things that I love.
When we first came to Australia, I was like, I'd like to live 1 year by the sea because I love the sea. And I didn't realize it then, but it wasn't until I was walking through the park that I was like, no, the trees is where you want to be. I feel so at peace in the trees. You know, some people feel it at the sea, but for me, it's the forest, it's the trees, it's the trails.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I've noticed in the last year is a feeling of being very at peace and content and feeling like I'm exactly where I'm meant to be. You know, a lot of life is spent craving the next thing or thinking, you know, my life will be better when I'm over there or, you know, and I feel like that's gone in the last year and there has been a real contentment for living where we are now and enjoying this life, this phase of life. Right, what's next? If it's not too personal, did you always want to be parents and how does parenting fit in with being an artist and running a business? So yes, I definitely did always want to have kids. I actually never questioned or thought about not having kids. You know, I find it interesting that even our kids, they think more about things than I ever did, which is wonderful. Like I really admire that about the younger generation, how they are so open to different options. Whereas I think I just saw my mum have four kids and I just thought that's what I'll be doing. And I only ended up having two, but I always wanted a big family. I grew up with a big family with kids sitting around a long table having lunches and I just loved that. So, yes, I always wanted to have children. How does parenting fit in with being an artist and a business owner? I am very grateful to our children for being my sanity saver because I feel like if I didn't have children, I'd probably run myself into the ground. I would be dead. Because having children helped me to become more efficient and also it makes sure that I stop because I make dinner for the children. I do things for the children that I don't know that I would be as good about doing if it was just for me and you even. They help me to make better life choices and to take breaks and to stop and to listen and to hear their stories and to realize that work isn't everything. Yeah, I'm very grateful for that. I feel like they've helped me to become much better at using my time and better at taking breaks. I'm not saying it's easy. There are definitely times when I'm in creative mode, and I'm not going to lie, there have been times where I've thought to myself, I wish I didn't have kids. Because they'll want things, and they're very chatty. Like the two of them, you know, they get home from school and they both want to chat nonstop. And there are times when I think about other artists and realize that they probably have a much longer day than what I have, particularly if I'm in the middle of something, I'm really deep with it. And it'll cross my mind for a moment that, you know, would it have been easier? Yeah, it probably would have, but would it have been as rewarding, and would I be as healthy and happy now? I don't think so. So we just have a few more questions. The next one is, how important are high quality styled photos, and maybe most of all, a nice styled feed for your business? So this one, I feel that high quality photographs are important, particularly when you are in that growth phase and you want to increase your followers on Instagram, Facebook. Do think that it makes a difference, and having some clarity around what you are sharing with the world. Do I do that myself? A little bit. You know, I wouldn't say that my feed is highly curated, because there is a bit of a balance. You know, if you have everything very on brand, it can come across as being quite almost corporate-like, and it loses that sort of personal side to it.
Sterile.
Yeah, so I do think there is a balance, and you can mix it up and throw in some more personal posts and photographs and things like that. It's always going to connect more if you take the time.
Yeah.
You know, and take a good quality photograph with good light, and you think about how you are presenting things.
Yeah, I would just remove the high quality bit, you know, because it doesn't have to be high quality. As in, you don't need to be shooting at 50 megapixels from a DSLR or a mirrorless system. You can definitely pick a spot where the light is nice and just style your shot and take it. Like, so the quality bit, I don't agree with. It doesn't have to be high quality. But yeah, you should really get into the habit of stylizing your photos.
Yeah, and it's important that your feed represents who you are and is a good fit. It's a bit like what we were talking about with the copywriting and how you do your captions. You know, if you like things to be really well organized and curated and, you know, the colors all match, then do that. But if you want to bring a bit more variety and spark, I think the most important thing is that it is a representation of you. And it depends a bit on what type of business you have and what audience you have too. So there are a number of factors. So moving on, did you know what your style of painting would be when you started? Absolutely not. I had no idea. And I explored many different things that felt really wrong at the time. You know, I'd try really bright colors. I'd try, drawing more characters and things like that, whimsical styles, really abstract things, florals, all sorts. So I'm not going to go too deep with that because we've talked quite a bit about finding style on other episodes and all that, but I'm just going to say no. The next one is, how did you meet and was it love at first sight? Do you want to answer this?
Why are you throwing it at me? Is that because you're doing all the talking?
It's a test.
Okay, get your red marker for a big F. We met in London, and it wasn't love at first sight because we were working in an office. Now, see the way I'm after saying it wasn't love at first sight. I used to work out because I was a manager for various sites around the place. So I was never in the office. So Laura got a job in the office, and then I was in the office every day. And Gillian, who was my boss at the time, she would say, "What are you doing in the office all the time? You're never here." But I'd be having cups of tea with Laura. And then, you know, when Laura would go and make her lunch, I would suddenly be in the lunchroom, you know. Oh, how convenient that we're here. And then Gillian, she obviously saw this because this was going on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then Gillian goes, "Why don't you just take her out?" Or she said something to you, "Richie will take you out somewhere." And I remember we went on our first date, and then that was it for me. Like, I knew, like, I don't, this is going to sound weird, right? But when we went out, it wasn't so much, "Oh my God, I love that girl." It was, "Oh no, oh no, my life's over." Well, I knew I was in big trouble. I knew it.
That is so funny because, first of all, it definitely wasn't love at first sight because I was oblivious to the first week or two when you were coming in and making me cups of tea and all that. I didn't register. And, I mean, you were looking really scruffy, Let's be honest. So you were trying, but you weren't trying that hard.
No.
And, you know, you were at the end stage. You had resigned and you were just doing your last few weeks in this company that I was temping at. This is in London. I remember when we did get set up on this date and I'd never seen you dressed up. So you'd always been just wearing scruffy construction type clothes and you rocked up at my doorstep looking very dapper. And I opened the door and I was like, "Oh my goodness, what happened here?" So it wasn't first sight. It was like 2-3 weeks in when you finally did something. I don't know what you did, but
well,
yourself out.
after our first date, when I handed in my resignation to work, my boss asked me to finish off two projects that had just started, and it would have meant staying with the company for another 6 weeks. And I said, on top of my notice, which was 4 weeks. And I remember saying to him, "No, absolutely not. I'm going back to Ireland. My ticket's already bought." And I'd left. And it was the same day you started. And then we went on our first date. And when I think our date was on the Friday night. And I went into his office the following Monday. And I said, "I'll finish those two projects for you if you want."
Oh, that's really funny.
So, So I guess it was love at first sight.
Yeah, it happened very quickly. Yeah. And the day after our first date, I sent a message with very similar sentiment to what you were saying before, basically sent a message to my best friend saying, "Oh, no, I'm in trouble." Like the same thing. I was like, "I don't know if this is good or bad, but something big is happening."
Yeah. I just remember it because I had absolutely no way to process it. Yeah. So I was just like, "Oh, crap."
Yeah, I was the same. So, yeah, our relationship started with both of us going, "Oh, crap, what have we done now?"
Mm.
We've met someone that's going to have a big impact. I knew that. When I met you, I knew like it was something big. Okay, on to the next one, which is how did you end up by having your designs used by Anthropology? You know what? This really surprised me when it happened. I'm pretty sure it was an email that came through to our general email, and it was one of the designers from Anthropology. And whenever I get emails like this, I do wonder if they're legitimate and real because Anthropology, it's a big brand. It's a big department store. And they had a couple of screenshots of my Instagram. And they'd chosen a few things off of my Instagram and just asked if they were available for licensing. And if so, they wanted them yesterday. It was all very rushed because they were finalizing their products. And as it turned out, I had them as digital files and I sent them over and that was that. So it was very quick and simple and it did come off the back of my Instagram feed. What do your children think of art as being your career?
Oh, devastating. Asher wants to be a YouTuber. And how can I say to him, you can't be a YouTuber, when he looks at us and goes, hang on a second.
Well, I'm not a YouTuber.
No, but you're creative. Like we, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like he sees the cameras, he sees the videos, he sees the microphones.
Yes,
he's,
yeah.
You know? But yeah, I think they love it.
I don't think they do.
Do you know?
I definitely don't think that our daughter loves it. I think
she's a teenager. She's not going to like anything.
She thinks it's the worst.
Oh. Well, that's after disappointing me now. I thought they loved
it. She loved it a few years ago, but, you know, she's 13 now. So I think you've pretty much summed it up. They don't really pay that much attention, to be honest. You know, they're busy with their own lives. So, yeah. I'd love to know if you or Richie would be interested in doing a course about the business side of things.
Oh, I read that you and Richie, but it's you or Richie.
Yeah. We have vacillated over this over many years. And I think maybe down the track we will do something business related. But our main business is creating online courses. So if we were to do something, it would be around that because I don't want to create a business where I'm encouraging people to do something, but it's not our main, say, source of income or whatever. So I want to be very authentic about it. Given your skills in videography, that would be the direction that we would probably go in. But I don't see it happening for us for a while. We did do a registration of interest on creating a video for artists course. And while we did have quite a lot of people join that, it was nowhere near the level of interest that we have when we, you know, put out an idea for an art course.
And also, our business model is accessibility, that we're accessible to almost anybody. We're not expensive, give like a really, really good product. But if you start getting into making a video or a course so other people can then go and make money, then that course has to be priced accordingly, and you're getting into crazy money, you know, like you're really getting into,
well, thousands. Rather than,
yes,
you know, we, yeah, so it's a little bit hard for us to figure out where it fits in our business model at the moment, so we're going to just put it to the side. We've put out a lot of free content around business building because we love chatting about it on the podcast, and we've done a few resources on the website. But as for like a more involved course, I don't think that's on the cards for at least another year or two, if ever.
Yeah, and it would be super, super niche and it'd be out of reach for so many people. We're all about, which sounds a bit crazy, but, well, it doesn't sound crazy, but we're all about providing a service to people. Like we get a kick out of people buying courses and painting.
Because the number of people that would be interested in that type of course, because it would be quite niche, isn't as high for our art courses. So therefore, to make it worthwhile, we'd have to charge a more premium price. And it's just, yeah, we haven't.
We have discussed it and we have looked at it and we even made out a couple of, you know, outlines on how it would look. But that's as far as we took it. So yes, we have looked at it, but at the moment we are not interested.
And the last question is, will you be doing any more art retreats in 2022? And the answer to that is no, we won't be doing any in-person retreats. But it's still very tricky even to get out of our country for travel and all that at the moment. I think for the stage of life that we are at the moment, if we are going to travel, it will be with our kids doing something, you know, where we can together as a family explore places. And I can see us maybe doing something like that, but it's well into our future. Yeah. So I think of it as maybe a retirement type of thing, you know. So, yeah, we won't be doing retreats. We'll be focusing mostly on online classes next year. So continuing on with the online business model. Well, that's the last question. I hope that you've enjoyed this episode of the podcast and that you'll tune in again next time. And next week will actually be the last episode of the year. So our kids break for school after that and we've decided to wrap the podcast at the same time so that we can spend more time as a family during the school holidays. So make sure that you tune in for our last episode where we'll be wrapping up the year and talking about our plans for next year.
And if you've made it this far in the podcast, it so was love at first sight.